Let's go. I've been told, by the way, that every single shiur that I have on Torah anytime starts with the words, okay, guys. That's what I've been told. So, okay, guys, right over here. Parts of the Yisro, guys, we're starting with 5778. It goes, Lo Sachmod Beis Reyacha. Person should not desire the house of your friend. You shouldn't desire the house of your friend. Lo Sachmod Beis Reyacha. You shouldn't desire the wife of your friend. His servant, his maidservant, his ox, his donkey, and everything that your friend has, all those things a person should not desire. So it's such a strange ending to the Aseres Dibros. You've got all the regular laws. Everything goes here. There seems to be a flow with the other four lavin. Lo Sirtzach, Lo Sinov, Lo Signov, Lo Sanavarecha, Yitzhakir. And then all of a sudden it goes to the Lo Sachmod. And those things seem to all commit with one another. The Lo Sachmod is strange. To say that there's a Mida over here, how in the world is a person supposed to stop himself from wanting something, desiring something? Everything else, I get, you can mention by all the other nine. It makes sense. This, it's just strange. So the Rishonim have a few suggestions as to how a person can work on this love, how you can stop yourself from wanting things, being involved in these desires over here, a natural feeling that you think could somewhat be stopped. So the Sforno says something simple. Pretend it's impossible. That's the simplest answer. Pretend it's impossible. If it's impossible and it can't be done, there's no way you're going to want to take it away or try to do it from something else. There's no way. Because you're going to say to yourself, it's impossible. I can't do it. So it's absolutely... Once a guy has it in their mindset that it's impossible, they can't do it. Then Ibn Ezra gives a mashal to explain this idea that the Sforno brings up. Really, the Sforno probably got it from the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra was before him. But the idea is like this. A villager doesn't have a desire for the princess of his land. Yes, he thinks she's beautiful. Yes, he would like, oh man, it would be unbelievable if I would become the prince. But like, Aladdin doesn't happen. You don't find like a magic genie somewhere and then all of a sudden like wish upon a star that you're a prince and then the princess realizes that she loves you for who you are and not the prince himself. No, that's a lie. Princesses marry princes. That's just what happens. A villager is not going to marry the princess. Such a person doesn't have that chemda, a desire to marry that type of princess. It just doesn't happen. It's just not like that. A normal person doesn't have a desire to grow wings and fly in the air. Yes, you might have a dream like, oh, wouldn't it be awesome if I flew up in the air? But it's not a normal thing for people to desire because it's impossible. It's not something that you can attain. It's not something you can grasp. The reason why people don't have desires for their relatives, even if their relatives are good looking, is because they're so used to them and they know what they can and what they can't do. They consider that something normal, right? They would never have a desire for somebody like that. It just doesn't exist. The idea would be there. This is how a wise person should look at everything that belongs to their friend. When they see something that belongs to his friend, be it his house, his car, his wife, or anything else he owns, anything else he has, you realize, you say, that's what's best for him, and this is what's best for me. And that desire slowly dissipates. Once you start thinking of it as, this is not in my grasp, it is beyond me to get. The mushel of the princess, the mushel of trying to fly. No matter how much I wish upon a star for my wings to start flowing, it's just not going to happen. That's not a desire. That's something that normal people will be able to take out, and that's that. His friend's wife becomes a princess that is unattainable. The car becomes the king's personal car, which I can't get. How can I grab the king's personal car? I'm not going to get the king's car. The idea behind that is that as long as you take advantage of the things that you have, then things go better. But once you start thinking about other things as possibly being your own, that's when the problem is there. So it's so easy to stop, says the Ibn Ezra. Think of it as impossible to attain. That's the idea behind it. The Avi Ezri says, most averos come from one of two desires. The desire for money and the desire, unfortunately, for znus, for arayas, for doing something improper. If you're constantly working on those two things, your desire for money and the desire for znus, if you're working on those two things, you'll find things get a lot easier. Says the Avi Ezri, that's what a person should concentrate on. It takes a lot of time and effort. But when you concentrate on those two things, things start flowing from there. Then things start getting better from there. Ksav HaKabbalah has Eitzah number two, a second bit of advice to be able to keep people away from bad things. The Pasuk says in Shema, V'ahavta Eis Hashem Elokecha, you have to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, b'chol levavecha, with all of your heart. All of your heart has to be used. It doesn't say bilvavecha, with your heart. You should love God with your heart. It says b'chol levavecha, with all of your heart. Now what does that mean? Says the Ksav HaKabbalah. He says it's easy. People have desires for things. But there's always something that can trump others, especially if it is the one thing that's bechol. All of your heart is filled with this one thing. If you have a love for one thing in particular, and that thing fills up your heart, there's nothing else that you can even put in. Yes, you can love. I love my wife, I love my kids, I love my family, I love some of you, right? That exists, that's out there, right? You can fill up a cup and add on the love there. But if there's one thing that's overarching, the number one thing that you love, that can trump anything else there. If a person truly loves HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Bechol Levavecha, the whole heart is filled with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, says that Ksav HaKabbalah, then anything that Hashem wants for you or wants you to do will be able to go in and add to the love that you have. And anything that Hashem doesn't want you to do is not allowed in. See, if a person loves God, but, you know, there's room for other things as well, then if the heart isn't filled with it, then you can fill it in with things that are contradictory to your love for God. You have a love for God, but you also love znus. I love God, but I also love stealing. I love God, but I also love murder. Right? You can add on things that are obviously evil, that are wrong, but you just add on to them. You just put it on. But if your heart is filled, b'chol levavecha, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's impossible to put something else in. You want to stop yourself from desiring someone else, to stop yourself from being around these other people and doing these types of things like that? The idea is sit there and say to yourself, b'chol levavecha, I'm going to love God fully, b'chol levavecha, with everything I have. And if I do that, then all of a sudden things get a little bit better. Then things come into a different way. That's HaKsav HaKabbalah over here, because there's no way. I love HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How could I possibly take something away from somebody else? There's no way that God wants me to have that or wants me to do that. The Beis HaLevi says something absolutely amazing. Beis HaLevi, obviously the Brisker, says, let's say you really want a cookie. You want a cookie and you see one across a lake that's frozen. There's a lake that's frozen over and the cookie is on the other side. It's a massive cookie and it's an awesome cookie. It's something that you really, really want. So you're going to start walking across the lake, the frozen lake, in order to get to that cookie. Now, let's say right in the middle of the lake, while you're right in the middle of the lake and you're sitting there and your mind is on that cookie. You're like, cookie man, that's 100% mine, right? And I'm sitting there and I'm going there. And then all of a sudden you feel a crack on the ice. Crack on the ice. What's your thought process at that moment? You could care less about that cookie. You're getting off that ice as soon as you possibly can. Unless you're a fool, unless you're an idiot, there's no way you're going to start running and still going like, I can still make it. That's not what normal people do. You're going to run away from the crack. You would never go that way. There's no reason to do. Why would you put your life in danger? See, at moments of pure fear, when you have a fear inside, you're afraid of something, even the fear of falling through the ice, you stop yourself from every desire there is out there. You can't want anything else because your mind is entirely focused on escape route. How do I get out? What can I do to get out? That's all you're thinking of. You can't think of anything else. Fear, by nature, is the biggest impediment to achieving your desire. Let's say, for example, you have a great business idea, an unbelievable business idea, and you're sitting there and you say, this is my idea. I want to do this, and I know it's going to work. And you have business, you went through everything, and you said, this is, I got it. Everything makes sense. But you're afraid to put yourself on your own like that. You're afraid to put yourself out there. Because who knows? Maybe somebody's going to reject it. Maybe you're not going to get the money. Maybe somebody's going to say it's a dumb idea. If you're afraid, you'll never achieve what you want to achieve. You'll never be able to do it. Fear knocks everyone down, says the Beis HaLevi. If that's true, there's such an easy way to get away from losach mode. Don't desire something. How do you stop yourself from desiring something? Be afraid. Have a yiras Hashem. Be afraid of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A little bit of fear will knock out every other Isser that you desire in your mind. Even the fear of falling, it all goes through. And this is true about every creature on earth. No animal can do anything when it's afraid of something. If it's afraid of something, anything, it'll stop what it wants to do and start running in the other direction. It's true by animals. It's true by everything. And that throws out the assumption that everybody makes. You've probably heard this before, and you're probably going to use it. You go up to Shemayim after 120, and you say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what did you want me to do? I had a massive Yetzer Hara. I couldn't stop myself from doing those things. I have a crazy Yetzer Hara. You created me with too big of a Yetzer Hara. There's nothing I could do. You know what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says? Not true. Yetzer Hara is the easiest thing in the world. You just needed to show it a little bit of fear. if you would have showed it a little bit of fear, you would have seen it was the easiest thing to jump over. It's really based on the Gemara in Sukkah Nun Beis. But the concept is, once it's there, once you're able to find that fear, find that Yiras Shamayim, that you can get through, everything changes. Everything changes. That's what a Kadosh Baruch Hu has to do. Ma Hashem Elokecha Shol Meimach. What does a Kadosh Baruch Hu have to do? Kim Liyira. Fear Him. So fear Him. Find that little bit of fear. Do it. And you'll find that everything else is so easy. Everything else just comes there. Now, I'm not... Time out, by the way. I can't tell you that I am now the expert in taking care of all of my chamdas and desires, and I have absolutely none. There's nothing out there because I clearly have that Yiras Shamayim. I can't tell you that I'm fully there yet, but a little bit of fear knocks out most. You just need a little bit more. I found, by the way, Webchaver is an unbelievable thing that was made. You guys all know about Webchaver, right? Right? You go ahead and you put yourself out there, you put yourself on Webchaver, and it gets sent over to somebody else. There's a fear there. There's a fear. Because why? Because your rabbi or your friend or your spouse is going to see everything you've been on. They're going to see the websites. They're going to see the things you Googled. They're going to see all the different things out there. So there's a fear there. There's a palpable fear. Wow, if I do this, then somebody's going to see it. But I've noticed something amazing. Absolutely amazing. There's fear, and then there's fear. People that have me as their web cover, and Baruch Hashem, I'm able to be the web cover for about, I don't remember how many people. One, so a little more than that, right? And these people that I'm the web cover for, so one guy, he messes up. It happens. And it's big mess ups. It's not small mess ups. I kind of think that I need a web cover for looking at the websites that this guy has me on for the web cover. I'm like, those words shouldn't be there. But it happens. Like, the guy messes up. So I write him. And I say, like, just know I saw. Right? And that's that. And then the next week, the same thing happens. Now, what's the pshat? How is it? How could he do that? He knows that I'm watching. And the answer is, he's not really afraid of me. He's not really afraid of me. He's not something like, what am I going to do to him? I'm going to go to his house, punch him in the face, and just say, like, that's for the website, and then walk away. It's like a different type of fear. There's like a fear, but it's not a real fear. There has to be more than just a little bit of fear. There has to be a palpable fear, something you can feel, a Yiras Shamayim, not a Yiras Onesh. Because again, if you're thinking that every time you go on a bad website, Rabbi Zimmerman is going to walk up to your door and he's just going to punch you in the face, or like kick you in the shins and just be like, listen, buddy, you can't do this ever again. Then I hear that. That might be like an actual fear. Like at any moment, I could be walking up to people, punching them in the face, like slashing their tires on their car. It should be an awesome life for me. But like I can hear that. But you need more than that. You need something that's really out there, and you need to get that fear within you. The reason why this Aver is part of the Aseres HaDibros is simple, according to the Me'am Lois, the way the Me'am Lois says it. Teaches a great lesson in Sameach B'Chelko. You go through everything and you forget what it's like to be a normal human being. We see this throughout Tanakh. Achav has everything. He's the king of Israel. Very wealthy man. Has a wife. Yizevel is an unbelievably evil person. But he was happy and he wanted his cousins, nephews, whatever it is, Nevel's field. He really wanted it. And his wife ended up murdering Nevel, murdering his family, and Achav ended up getting the field. That little bit of desire that he couldn't get over. And he's a king. He's a king. It's unreal. He wanted something that wasn't his, and he lost everything from it. He lost everything. Nevel is the reason why Achav dies later on. It's a crazy idea of what happens. Not only does it that, like everything goes. The Nachash desired what Adam and Chava had. Do you need any bigger of a raya of what happened to the Nachash afterward? You see what happened to the Nachash. Cain, Korach, Doeg, Achitophel, Gehazi, Bilam, Avshalom, Adoniyahu, Uziah. You can go through Tanakh and you see this concept one after the other. These are great men. Tzadikim, who lost everything because they couldn't get over their desires. They couldn't get over what they wanted that somebody else had. That is there any other reason to list this in the top 10? I don't want to say it's the top 10 because that's really not what it is. But the basic ideas of what humanity is based off of what a person needs to do in order for us to be as real Yehudim, real Jews to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's why it makes it up there. There are so many times you might be over on the Vera and you didn't even realize it. Grizz says, you all know this story. You ever heard this story? A guy is a thief. He's inside the tzaddik's house and he's caught. The tzaddik comes home, the tzaddik wakes up, I don't know, whatever it is, right? And the thief starts running away and the tzaddik runs out of the house running after him. What does he yell? Macholach? No. He yells out, Hefker, Hefker. Hefker, Hefker. You guys heard the story as well. I heard Macholach also, by the way. But the Grizz says, the guy yells out, Hefker, Hefker. So let me ask you, this is what the Grizz asked. He said, why didn't he yell out loud, it's your gift, I'm giving it to you? It's a gift for you. Why wouldn't he have yelled that? Wouldn't that make sense also? Instead of saying hefker, why didn't he say, it's your gift? You know why? Says the Grizz. Because if he would have yelled out, it's a gift, then you're right, he wouldn't be over on Los Sigzel anymore. He wouldn't be stealing anymore. But he would be over on Los Achmod. That would be an Isser of Los Achmod. Did you know that? Forcing someone to give something to you as a gift is Los Achmod. You really like something. So, Frank, I really love your coat. Your coat is absolutely amazing. Is that real? That looks real. That looks unbelievable. Wow. So, you know, I've been giving you shirim for a while now. And, you know, I've never asked for anything before. Don't you think it would be like a nice thing to give to me? Like, if you already have, you know, you get another coat. That right there is Los, if it works, is Los Achmod. Like begging from somebody to give it to you as a gift or even to sell it to you will end up being Los Achmod. So let's talk a little bit more. The Chafetz Chaim says, when Mechutanim get together, Mechutanim means the two sides, the Kalos family and the Chosin's family, get together to discuss expenses. Everybody's allowed to ask for whatever they want or say, I can pay for this, but I can't pay for that. I'll do this, I'll do that. Both of them can get together and they make their side. When they finish their Tanoim, when they finish their, here's what we're promising for the wedding, after they finish it, if they what they end up doing is go to the other side and say, hey, can you do this as well? And they ask for the other side to pay for something that's theirs. And like, come on, it's our, you know, our chosin and kala, they're such great people. How about you take care of this as well? Once you do that, the tanayim are made, right? And then you add on to it, you make him do something like that. All of a sudden, that's Los Achmod. Los Achmod is making somebody pay for something by making them feel bad enough to pay for it. Says the Chofetz Chaim, people don't know that, people don't realize that. But that's part of Los Achmod. He says, even if the item isn't in your friend's hands, everybody knows from eBay, right? What do you do if you really want to grab something away from somebody else? You can snipe it away from somebody else, right? If you do that in business, a certain person is expecting to get a certain object or a certain house or whatever it is, right? A guy is expecting something and you swoop in and grab it from him last second. He expected it to be there. And there's a reason for him to think that way. He thought he had a deal. And then somebody swoops in and grabs it and takes it out. That's Los Achmod. That is Los Achmod. Now, obviously, there are conditions to that. And I don't want to be able to give you a psak right up here. I'm not a Choshen Mishpat guy, right? I don't know what I am, but I'm not a Choshen Mishpat guy, right? So I don't know. I'm not positive that's going to work in every case. But the Chofetz Chaim brings that down as something you're going to get over here. But let's get back to the ideas. The Chizkuni says that these Dibrot are all connected to one another. And if you think about it, Los Achmod does flow in the flow of how the Aseret Dibros go. Now, both sides are separate from one another, so go like this. Not only do you have to accept God as God, that's Anochi Hashem Elokecha, but you can't accept another God along with God. That's Lo Yelech Elohim Acherim Alpana. Okay? You can't have another God along with me. Not only can you not accept another God as something else with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but you can't even swear to another God, swear while still believing in HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. I'm not going to worship that other God, but I'll swear and I'll do stuff like that. You can't even do that, Lo Sisa. Not only that, but you have to follow what I want you to follow. You have to keep Shabbos as well, because that's what I do. I want you to follow in my footsteps. And not only that, but you have to honor those who are like me, and your parents are like me, and that's Kibbutz Av Va'Em. You go into the other list, you can't murder someone. That's the worst thing you can do to somebody. You're killing him. You can't even do Lo Sinaf. You can't even commit adultery and aser his wife upon himself or do some type of arayas. Not only that, but you can't steal from somebody as well. And I know really it means kidnapping, but you can't steal from him as well. You can't steal. You can't even testify falsely to take away his money. And not only that, you can't even think that I want what's his and try to take away what's his in your mind and plot and stuff like that. Even if there's no actual loss of money that's happening, you're paying the guy. Even that is going to be usher. So this is the Miyam Loez. He says, people make this mistake all the time, and really this is based on a Gemara in Vav Metzia, Daf Hei Amud Beis, Vav Amud Aleph, in which it says, people think the Los Achmod is, the idea is the Isser is only when you want to get something from someone else and you convince them to give it to you for free. Like I just did, right, with my new coat right over here from Ephraim, right? That would be Los Achmod. But if I offer him money, then there's no Isser of Los Achmod. That's what people think. There's no Isser of Los Achmod if I offer him money. If I convince him to sell it to me, why is that Los Achmod? I really, really want Ephraim's coat. He's not giving it to me for free. So I say, fine, here, take this money. And I force the money on him. and I force him to sell it to me. And again, I make him feel bad enough that he's going to give me the coat. That's also lo sachmod, says the Gemara, and says the Mi'am Loez. The idea is that's still lo sachmod. There is a Tosas in Sanhedrin Chafayim and Beis that seems to argue. You can check out that Tosas on top of the daf. But it seems that this is also lo sachmod, and the Rambam mentions this as well. It is lo sachmod. This is the reason why, people remember, Migud HaChashad HaMona HaChashad HaShavuasa? If you're suspected, right, regarding money, then we can't let you swear. If we think you're lying or we think you're stealing, we can't allow you to swear. That doesn't apply when it comes to Lo Sachmod. You know why it doesn't apply in Lo Sachmod? Because people don't know what Lo Sachmod is. He's not Choshed HaMamone. He's just a fool. Like, if a guy steals, we say, all right, you stole, we can't allow you to take a shvua. You're clearly no Gei HaBedaver, and you might lie in order to make a little bit of money. But Lo Sachmod, if you're over on Lo Sachmod, people don't even know what it is. They don't have a problem with it. They don't have a problem. They don't know what this idea is. You're postulatus midu rabbana, but you're not postulatus midu raisa. The whole idea of chashar mona chashar shuasa doesn't apply here. It's amazing. Says that Yalas HaShachar, Rav Aaron Leib Shimon says that you're allowed to want something that someone else has, and you can plan on buying it somewhere else. Let's say I really see that coat, and I'm like, wow, that's an amazing coat, and you decide, you know what, I'm going to go check it up. I'm going to see if I can find it on the internet somewhere. Again, clean, filtered internet, or I'm your web cover, one of the three, right? But either way, but you're going to look up something, and you're going to say, like, I really want to find that coat. You're allowed to do that, because you're not taking it away from that person, but you can't take it away from that person itself. Thinking that somebody else has something, and he looks cool in that, that's okay. Like, thinking like, oh, wow, those sunglasses are something that I really, really want. I don't know why anybody wants sunglasses. But let's say, like, those are cool sunglasses. I love sunglasses. I'm going to get that pair of sunglasses. To say I'm going to get a pair like it is fine. To say I think that pair of sunglasses looks awesome on you is perfectly fine. To convince them to sell it to you is the problem. To convince them to give it to you is a problem. But to go ahead and get it yourself shouldn't be a problem whatsoever. Says the Malvim. In this week's Parsha, it says, Lo Sachmod. In Parsha's Vaschanan, anybody know what it says? It doesn't say Lo Sachmod, it says Lo Sachmod by Isha, but it says Lo Sis Ave, Taiva. What's the difference between Taiva and Chemda? They both mean desire. What's the difference between those two words? How does it work between them? Says the Malvim, Chemda is a feeling based on what you see. I see this coat, I see your sunglasses, I see something that you have, and I want it because it's something that you have. Says the Malvim, a Taiva is something that's almost irrational. I think you have it, and therefore I desire it. That could refer to almost like a generally speaking, like, oh man, Ephraim is so wealthy, I want Ephraim. This Ephraim this time, is that okay? That Ephraim is so wealthy, I want all of his money. It's a taiva, not a chamda. I don't see the wealth. I don't see what he has. I have a taiva for something that I cannot necessarily see. A chamda applies to specific things. A possession that he has, his house, or his wife, or something like that. Well, a taiva is more of a general. You can't have a general taiva for what he has over there. The key is the difference is like this. Chamda means, I don't want my friend to have it. Taiva means, I want it for myself. Says the Malvim, the difference is that a person has a taiva for his friend's wealth or station. I want that for myself. A chemda is that I don't want my friend to have it. Lo sachmod means don't try to take away from your friend. Lo sis ave means don't even say to yourself, I just want what he has, even if you don't exactly see it. What's up?
What if you pay above the value of whatever item
it is? Even so, if it came through Lo Sachmod, in other words, you plotted and planned to get it from that guy because you wanted what he had, even if you want it for yourself, but you wanted what he had, and you could have gotten it somewhere else, but you specifically want what that guy has, that becomes a problem. Unless the guy is willing and clearly willing to sell you what he has, right, it'll be a problem. So let's say you see something, you know, that coat, the coat over here, right? You know it's an $100 coat and you offer him $1,000 for it because Ephraim wore it. That's amazing. Like Ephraim wore that, I'm going to pay you $1,000 for it. So again, it depends. Is Ephraim willing to sell? Or is Ephraim not willing to sell? If he's not willing to sell and you're pushing him to sell it, Lo Sachmod. If Ephraim is willing to sell, and I think most people would be willing to sell their coat for $1,000 if it's not worth $1,000, then there shouldn't be an issue of Lo Sachmod. Right, that shouldn't be it, at least according to what they're saying over here. The reverse says the famous one that I think you've all heard of before. The difference is Lo Tis Ave is a thought process that will, I guess you can say, possibly lead to an act. Lo Sachmod is actually doing something based on a desire that you have, really doing something, forcing him to sell it to you. The Rambam mentions in Lo Saseh number 265, anything that wants and impresses him, automatically it's going to be over. The Chizkuni says, you can prove this from the fact that it talks about the person's wife. You can check out the Tosafot, the Chizkuni yourself, and see what happens over there. Now, let's go into a couple other cases. The Tosefis Brocha asks, why are you not over on this lav, right on Losach mode, if you want to marry your daughter off to your friend's son, right? And you say, man, my friend has an unbelievable son. I want that son to be my son-in-law. Why is that not Losach mode? No, it's interesting. Losach mode for a mitzvah, you're saying. Yeah. Can you do Losach mode to get a mitzvah away from your friend and keep, take it for yourself? Now, in this case, it's not exactly taking it away from your friend, right? Because he marrying off his son should be fine. But the real issue is taking that son, right, that my friend has, that's an awesome son, and wanting him to live in my house with me, to be part of my family, how is that not lo sach mode? There might be a mitzvah in marrying him off, right, and marrying off to your daughter, so you get that mitzvah, but nonetheless, lo sach mode shouldn't be able to push away, or that I guess it's the asei docha lo saseh, but I don't know if the asei is exactly accomplished at that moment when you're doing lo sach mode. It's not, because I have the lo sach mode right now, so probably wouldn't be asei docha lo saseh. So right now, before they get married, how is it not lo sach mode to plan an idea how to convince that guy to have his son marry my daughter? That would be the idea. Ben, what's
the same also be applied by God Ezra?
Very good call. An estrog that somebody else has that you plan on getting. So hold on. So the Tosefis Bracha asks this thing, why isn't it there? He answers that this iser only comes up when there's a possibility of gezel at the end. By the estrog, that'll be a major problem. If you think all the way through, how can I get that estrog, and I force my friend to give me the estrog, that can be lo sach mode, because there was a possibility of gezel at the very, very end, right? The guy at any point could say, no, I don't want to give you this, right? That's the idea. In that case, that's a problem. Over here, it's different. By the marriage, it's different. A father cannot protest on a son deciding to marry a girl. Can't make the protest. If it's a girl over the age of 12, right? Can't protest. If the girl or the son decide they're going to get married, the girl over the age of 12 and a son decide they're going to get married, the father can't say anything. Can the father have a say in the matter? I mean, for my kids, yeah. For everybody else, you hope, right? There should be a say in the matter. But it's not lo sach mode, says the Tosefis Bracha, since it's not in his hands. You're not stealing anything from him. You're not stealing. There's no possibility of stealing his son away from him. I know we say the vernacular. It's almost like, well, I'm taking the son away from the father by marrying him off to him. It's not really true. The son makes the decision on his own. So having a plan in how to get this guy as my son-in-law is good. But what you can't do is, if the son-in-law is being courted by another family, a future son-in-law, a guy that you want as your cousin, right? Your cousin for your daughter is being courted by another family. You can't swoop in there and take him away before anything happens. I don't know what the exact what the parameters are for such a thing. I don't know if it's like before the engagement or after the engagement or right before the engagement. I don't know when it would be. But if you see a certain family involved in a certain shidduch, and you say, that guy, I need that guy for my daughter, and you get in, and I'm not even saying you make rumors. You just say like, oh, by the way, my daughter's on the market. And the guy's like, your daughter? Wow, no way, I'm in. And he goes, and he decides to marry your daughter instead of that other girl. That could be over on Lo Sach mode. Might be worth it. Such a great cousin, such a great son-in-law. I'm sorry? Because Lo Sach mode is, meaning the concept is that you're taking away from the other person what they already have. They're taking away that chosin. Here, so you're right, but what we said before was, at least according to the way the Chofetz Chaim said it, is if he's expecting it to happen, and it's going to happen, and that's why I said parameter, I don't know what the parameters are and how to happen, but if there's some way of knowing that the guy was expecting this to happen, it was all there, etc., and you swooped in and grabbed it away, that would be a problem. But again, parameters-wise, I don't know how it would be, but that's the idea behind it. You got to be so careful with stuff like that. So it's very, very, yeah, what's up?
How do you buy anything from anyone?
How do you buy anything from, no. If a person's willing to sell, something, guy puts something up on eBay, or a guy is selling something in a store, right? That guy wants to sell it. It's not like you go in a store, right? It's not, yeah, of course you can bargain. First of all, we're Jewish. Yeah. So second of all, right, aside from that, you go into a store, it's not like you go into a store and it's like, how much is that? Oh no, not for sale. How much is that? Not for sale either. How much is that? All right, like, you would leave. Everything is up for sale. If something is for sale, you're perfectly fine.
What if it's a salesman who's going out and he's actively searching to sell products?
Okay, he's trying to sell it. That's fine. Then there's no issue of you saying anything like, sell me that item. That's what he's doing. He's trying to sell you the item. Remember, low stock mode is only... Yeah, exactly. He wants you to do... So, again, low stock mode doesn't go the other way. It doesn't go by the seller. Low stock mode goes by the buyer. The buyer cannot try to take away something that somebody doesn't want to sell or take it away from another buyer, right? So we're only going with the buyer here. We're not dealing with the seller. So when it comes to the buyer himself, the buyer is sitting there and he's saying, well, I want that item. Well, if it's for sale, good. And if it's not for sale, then it could be low stock mode. If you go, this is a great example because somebody just brought, oh, Shuki, you were the one who just sent me that. You just sent me this picture. There's a, there's in the animal store down on Tui. You know the pet shop over there? There are certain animals in that shop that are not for sale. That are not for sale. It's like they're zoo items. They have like certain animals that are there, just part of their whatever itself, right? Okay? Let's say you go inside and you're like, I want to buy that animal. They're like, it's not for sale. I think you want me to buy that animal, right? And you force them and you're just like, listen to me, buddy, okay? You're selling me that animal. And I don't say by force. You're just like, come on, we're good friends. Don't you want to? And he's like, no, I don't really want to sell it. It's not for sale. It's not for sale. And you push him and you push him and you push him and eventually you get him to sell it to you. That could be low stock mode. Now, if it's something where the seller's like, oh no, I don't want to buy it, but if you make me a good enough offer, then 100% I'll sell it. That's different. That's not low stock mode. The guy wants to sell it. He's just going to sell it for a good price. He wants it at a certain price. Yeah, Moshe. A desire for something spiritual, you know, something that's not physical in front of them?
No, I'm saying they have a service that they do. And they have a standard rate, but you want them to work at an overtime at a time that's...
That might be a question that I won't have to deal with. If it's a monetary issue, the answer is yes. If it's not a monetary issue, which this doesn't necessarily sound like, I don't know, right, then probably there's no issue. But I don't want to say it without looking inside. I didn't see that case. Yeah, Ben.
Is it low stock mode while he's pushing or until it actually is sold?
So very good call. Lo sis ave is when you have the desire in your head and whatever. Lo sach mode is when you do it. You're not over on lo sach mode until you actually get him to sell it to you. Plotting and planning, I shouldn't say that for sure. There are Rishonim that say plotting and planning is lo sach mode, but it's not the act, you don't get the lav of lo sach mode fully. It's still usher. This is, you don't get it fully until it's right over there. Now, the punishment for this lav is very interesting. Let's go into the punishments and then the reward over here. Targum Medicine mentions three different punishments. When someone does lo sach mode, number one, the government will come and seize his property. Okay, that's number one. In some way, this is mita keneged mita. You wanted something that belonged to something else, so the government wants something that belongs to you. Mita keneged mita. Number two, it causes people to lose their own money because they're concentrating on what the other person has. They don't work on themselves at all. They end up losing money from it. Number three, there's an issue of gullus. You try to do low stock when you take away something from somebody else, gullus comes to the world and everybody leaves their land because of it. The Kliyakar says the result of this avera, if a person does low stock when he's going to give birth to evil children or not going to give him any honor whatsoever. This may be because his thoughts are always about other people. Since his thoughts are always about other people, even his children are affected about that. It affects his Zivug with his wife, says the Kliyakar, and therefore the child born from such a relationship in which he's thinking about other people the whole time is going to be an evil child. It may also be because someone wants something that other people have, he won't give away his money easily. The children will never get what they really want. They'll feel like they play second to anything the father desires, and therefore they don't love their father. So there might be a bad relationship over there. On the other hand, there's a crazy reward for someone who doesn't become jealous of others. It says in Gemara Shabbos, Kupnan Bezim Abez, Kol She'ein Lo Kina Belibo, if you do not have jealousy in your heart, your bones do not rot. Your bones don't rot. Yosef Atzadik expected himself to have bones at the end of Parshas Vayechi and the beginning of Parshas Beshalach. He expected, take away my bones. It may be because there was a little bit of jealousy that Yosef Atzadik had for the Shvatim, and the Shvatim had a little bit of jealousy for Yosef Atzadik. There's a Rishon that says that because of that little bit of kinna that causes Markivan Atzmosa, because he had that issue, and I don't know if it's low sakmo per se, but it's the kinna involved, then you run into this issue, all of a sudden if it's Atzmosa of Markivan, that's what ends up happening over here. Otzer Plos, the Torah brings a tremendous Chassam Sofer in Tshuvas, Yoredea number 337, who was asked by a Kohen, who went through a backyard of a non-Jew. Listen to this. He went through the backyard of a non-Jew. As he's walking through this backyard, he sees a grave. And on the grave, it's a Jew. The Jew was buried there 400 years ago. He's a Kohen. So what's the problem? Can he walk into that area? Because clearly there was a bit of a cemetery there. Maybe there were other graves in that area. Maybe there's other people there. Can he walk around in there? And especially, could he walk on that area? What does he do if he walked on that area? Says the Chasam Sofer. He answered, you have a cheskes kashrus. Listen to this. You have a cheskes kashrus. We can assume that that guy who was buried in the ground, even though it was 400 years ago, and what happens after 400 years? It decays. The bones rot. You assume he doesn't have enough of a body to be metame mes. According to the Chasam Sofer, you can assume he never had jealousy. And if you don't have jealousy, what happens? You don't rot. Which means that the body is a full body, so that the Kohen can't walk there because there's tumah. Chasam Sofer paskins that you can assume that this guy never had kina, and you can assume he's still alive and alive. His body is still full in the ground, and therefore you can't walk on top of it. The Minchas Lazer, the Munkacher, he asks in Chelik Aleph Samach Zayin, how can you assume anybody's on that high of a madrega? You can assume that somebody is on such a high madrega that he's not going to rot after he dies? That's crazy. It's not something you can assume about people. He brings a Rashi's Chachma, the Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, this is what it says, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak found a mound with a body that didn't rot in it. It was in the schus that he was never omid al-midos of his whole life. That when people made fun of him, he never made fun of them back. He never said exactly what he needed. He just did. He learned Torah his whole life, etc. How can you assume, said the Munkacher, that everybody is like that? How can the Chasam Sofer assume that that's that? You have a cheskes kashrus, not a cheskes chasidus. How in the world could that be? He adds in a sefer Divrei Torah, Madura Dalid, Osayin Vav, that although bones don't rot, the flesh definitely rots. Only by great tzaddikim do we see that the flesh doesn't rot for hundreds of years. He says when the Hungarian government told them to clear out a cemetery near Munkacs because they wanted to make a road there, they found when they were disinterring some of the bodies, they found a woman that they had taken out who was known to be a very tzenua woman who did not rot a bit. She must have been a very tzenua in which she didn't have any kinah for others and therefore she didn't rot. The same went for a man. There was a tzion that just said the word tzaddik. And they opened it up. They saw nothing, no rot whatsoever. A person who doesn't have kinah, doesn't have this issue of low sach mode, that person is going to be okay. The Shach says, the reason why this is last is because when someone has chemda, it's so easy to be over on all nine of the previous divros. You have chemda, you desire other things, you're going to murder, you're going to steal. It's going to be hard to keep Shabbos. It's going to be hard to honor your parents. You're going to find it hard to believe in God. That's what happens when a person goes there. Rav Hirsch says, this proves that the Aseres Divros was given by God and not by man. A man cannot command you not to desire. It doesn't make any sense. A man doesn't know what you're desiring, what you're not desiring. But a Kadosh Baruch Hu can. A Kadosh Baruch Hu put this in the Aseres Divros to tell you, I'm God. I know what you're doing. I don't want you to have those thoughts inside your head. That's a specific, it's a negative commandment done there on purpose to let you know that God made it. Tom Vidas from Strombach says, this means that the first and last mitzvos of the Aseres Divros are both thoughts in the head. What's the first mitzvah of the Aseres Divros? Believe in God. What's the last? Don't desire. Everything else is a maisa. Whether it's a negative precept or a positive precept, it's a maisa of some sort. But the first and the last, the Aseres Divros starts with the machshava and ends with the machshava. Starts with believing in God and ends with this idea over here. This is the idea. If one truly believes in God, he'll never want something that doesn't belong to him. And that's really going back to what we have over there. That's the real answer as to how a person should work on himself and go through over there. I'm going to end with this. The Chasam Sofer says there are 620 letters altogether in the Aseres Divros. 620 letters. Quotes is from the Hakdama to the Smag. 620 letters. Why 620 letters? Because you have 613 mitzvos and you also have the Sheva mitzvos. B'nai Noah. 620. He adds that the last words in Lo Sachmod, Asher L'Reyecha, stand for the seven mitzvos midrabanan. What are the seven mitzvos midrabanan? So the Aleph stands for Avelos. The Shin stands for Simchas Chosen V'Kala. Right? Avelos. And then Sheva Brachos / everything we do for a wedding itself. The Reish is Rechitzas Yadayim. You're supposed to do Netilas Yadayim for bread. The Lamed is for Lechem, that you can't eat Pas Akum, Pas Vagoy. Reish stands for Reshuyos, which includes Eruv Chatzeros and Eruv Tchumen, etc. Those types of things, Shitufim Yivos, etc. Ayin stands for Amalek. And the very end, the Chaf Sofis stands for Kohanim and the miracle of Hanukkah that happened through their efforts. That's that Shir L'Reyach. You have the other seven mitzvahs to Rabbanan that are added onto that. All right, guys, we'll stop with that for right now. Have a great Shabbos, everybody.